ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भगवद् गीता एज इट इज, Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, text 65, and I'll also read 66, but we'll chant together the verse, text 65. Prasade sarva dukhanam, hanirasyo pajayate, Prasanna Cheta Sohyashu, Buddhif Paryavatishtate, Prasade Sarva Dukhanam, Hanirasyo Pajayate, Prasanna Cheta Sohyashu, Buddhif Paryavatishtate, Prasade. Yeah, everyone knows what prasad means, right? It's that which we're all eagerly waiting for at the end, waiting for the class to finish. Well, I hope it's tasty, that you are all eagerly waiting for it. That is not... It's not one of those austerities that devotees have to go through. Anyway, translation that Srila Prabhupada gives here is, on achievement of the causeless mercy of the Lord. On achievement, causeless mercy of the Lord. Prasad means mercy. Remember, Krishna's the supreme enjoyer. That's what we discussed yesterday. Sarva, of all dukhanam, material miseries, hanihi, destruction, asya, his, upajayate, takes place, prasanna, chetasaha, of the happy minded, he certainly, Ashu, very soon, Buddhihi, intelligence, Pari, sufficiently, Avatishtate, becomes established. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. There's no purport to this verse. I'll read the next one. Nasti buddhira yuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana nacha bhavayata shantir ashantasya kuta sukham. One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Purport. Unless one is in Krishna consciousness, there is no possibility of peace. So it is confirmed in the fifth chapter. Chapter 5, text 29, the verse that I read and discussed yesterday. It is confirmed in the fifth chapter that when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, that he is the proprietor of all universal manifestations, and that he is the real friend of all living entities, then only can one have real peace. Therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal, and when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, and friend of everyone and everything, then one can with a steady mind bring about peace. Therefore, one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is certainly always in distress and is without peace, however much he may make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. Yesterday I spoke on the peace formula. One can have peace if he understands that, and not just understands, but makes it one with his consciousness. His whole way of seeing the world, his worldview is fully aligned with the understanding that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Krishna is the supreme proprietor, overlord, and controller. Krishna is the supreme friend of everyone. Such a person can attain peace. And in the purport, which I just read, Srila Prabhupada discusses that principle further. The whole discussion here is about attaining happiness. And it comes down to ashantasya kuta sukham. A rhetorical question. Krishna also uses rhetorical language. So, or rather, yeah, he uses it, and we use it as a reflection from him. Where is the question of peace? Where is the question of happiness for one who is not peaceful? It's a roundabout way of saying that a person cannot be happy unless he is peaceful. Now, in one sense, the whole topic of Bhagavad Gita and the whole topic of all philosophy, ultimately, of course, there are different branches of philosophy in the Western tradition. There's logic, ethics, epistemology, and ontology. The four branches of philosophy. But ultimately, it's all about how can we be happy? How can we find happiness? Which suggests that, as the Bhuktaram Yajna Tapasamba, it suggests or indirectly points out that no one's peaceful and no one's happy in this material world. Krishna wouldn't have to say that you can attain peace if you understand these three things, if we were already peaceful. So it's understood that everyone is not peaceful. Everyone's mind is disturbed in various ways. And there, one can, by some mechanical process, try to shut down the mind, try to still the mind. But it's a very difficult process to do that. And it's not very successful. Any little stimulation and the mind can again be agitated. The great example is that of Vishvamitra, who was practicing sense control and meditation. So he's sitting for thousands of years, 60,000 years, something, with his mind peacefully controlled. But he couldn't get up and do anything. And then just on not even seeing the beauty of the Apsara, Menaka, but just even hearing the tinkle of the ankle bells. So what? Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. And then he thought in the mind, tinkle, 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 ankle bells, woman, enjoyment, and his whole sense control was finished, at least for the time being. So that's a very difficult, artificial process to control the mind. The natural, easy, process is to savai mana Krishna padara vindayoho, to fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna, and that is the full and complete process also, because that's where the mind should be. That's our natural constitutional position. All other processes to attempt to control the mind or to have spiritual advancement, they're all like putting square pegs into a round hole. It doesn't fit properly. You must have some saying like that in Tamil also. Maybe not exactly the same. Trying to fit something in, it doesn't fit, it's not going to fit properly. However much you try to push it in, you can artificially put it in, but it won't sit in there properly. So Krishna consciousness is the process of happiness. The Bhagavad Gita is a treatise, how to be happy. Vijay Prabhu, the ISKCON minister of book distribution, he has shared many of his realizations on book distribution, and he says often when he's selling Bhagavad Gita, he shows this verse, Sukham Atyantikam Yattad. He shows the English translation of this, that one can achieve such a great happiness that there's nothing higher than this. Of course, that's only for the yogis. That's in their estimation. But there's much, much more than the yogis' happiness. But he shows that to people and they, oh yeah, I want to get this book. The greatest happiness, upon gaining which thinks there's nothing else to be attained. This is it. So ultimately, it's a book of happy. Arjuna ultimately was thinking how to be happy. He's thinking what to do for his duty. What is my duty? What is the best thing to do? But, well, actually, that was his fault in the Bhagavad Gita. Kimbo, what is that? Kingo Rajena Bhogena. Where will be the enjoyment in a kingdom? He was thinking of his own happiness. He didn't think that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So there's nothing wrong with wanting to be happy. That might sound like a truism, but sometimes it's misunderstood that if there is no happiness in the material world, then the desire to be happy is illusory. It's wrong. It's not wrong to want to be happy, because that is the nature of the soul, to be happy. But we should know how to be happy. How to be happy? Just understand that we are meant for Krishna's service. We have a constitutional position, which is to serve Krishna. Selflessly, when we stop thinking about how to make myself happy and think only how Krishna will be happy, then we become happy. Very simple formula. Actually, this whole Bhagavad Gita, in one sense, there's no need for it. If we just accept the conclusion, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishasi satyante pratijane priyos. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. And then even then, Krishna, then you will come to me, I promise you. So that's a bait, you could say. You'll get a reward. He's still telling Arjuna, you'll get a reward. Sarva dhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam vraja ahang tva sarva papebhyo moksha yishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of whatever you think is religion and just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sinful reaction, do not fear. There's still some bargaining going on there. That, okay, you come to me, surrender to me, I'll look after you. Of course, a higher standard is just beyond philosophy, where the devotee doesn't even consider, well, should I surrender to Krishna, or should I do what I want for myself, but the devotee just automatically, being so much absorbed in love of Krishna, that there's no consideration of, his only consideration of what to do or what not to do is only on the principle of how Krishna will be pleased. Not the question of whether I shall be pleased doesn't come into it at all. So this peace here, we can understand that's very important. If one is peaceful in Krishna consciousness, that the devotee who only thinks how Krishna will be pleased, he's achieved a level of peace. He's beyond the level of having a tussle with his mind, tug of war. The mind or Maya is calling, no, don't serve Krishna, or don't serve fully, but you have to look after yourself also. And on the other hand, he's thinking, no, I have to serve Krishna. So that's going on in the mind, and there's no peace, because sometimes he's thinking how to serve Krishna, sometimes the mind is being pulled away, sometimes he gives in to the mind a little bit. But one who's beyond the platform of even thinking, should I surrender to Krishna or should I not? Yes, I'll surrender. But no, I just there's something, some other idea. One who's beyond that platform and just doesn't even think at all whether or not to serve Krishna. The only lack of peace in his mind will be how to serve Krishna. Should I do this or should I do that? Arjuna wasn't on that platform. He was thinking, what I want. Of course, Arjuna is a great devotee who was apparently put into that illusion so that we could have Bhagavad Gita spoken by Krishna for us, for our benefit. No, Arjuna, he wasn't peaceful. He wanted peace. He wanted peace. Let's not fight. Let's all be good and not fight. But if he hadn't fought, he wouldn't have been peaceful. And then when he surrendered to Krishna, he went into battle, killing people left, right and center, and he became peaceful. How is that possible? By making peace, you don't become peaceful. By fighting, you become peaceful. How is that possible? Well, that's the political strategy also. And someone, we'll kill everyone, we'll kill all our enemies, and then we'll be peaceful. Then they won't threaten us anymore. The one who has such an attitude, then they'll create enemies. And then he has to go on killing everyone until there's no one left. Oh, now I'm peaceful. No one to disturb me. Then he's with his own mind. So he can never be peaceful. The only way to be peaceful is to surrender to Krishna. So Arjuna, he became very peaceful when he surrendered to Krishna. Yes. Nashto moha smriti labda tat prasadena vayachuta stitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanantara. Yeah, now, okay, now I'm firm in my resolve. My doubts have gone away, my illusion has gone away by your mercy. You can see the parallel with this verse. Prasad, the same words are there. Prasade sarvadukanam. Then nashto moha smriti labda tat prasadam ayachuta. So it's by the mercy of Krishna that he was able to become free from that illusion and become fixed in consciousness. Peacefulness comes, as Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, that the real friend of them, there must be a final goal for the mind. One must have a clear idea of what he's doing. So that is the proper final goal is Krishna consciousness. One may have a final goal, I want to suppress all my enemies. One can be very fixed in consciousness without being a yogi or without being in Krishna consciousness at all. Very fixed. I want to destroy all my enemies, or I want to be the world chess champion or something like that. You can be fixed in that, but fixed in that consciousness, but it doesn't last. It's all temporary. Whereas Krishna consciousness goes on in this life, next life, in the spiritual world. It's the proper goal for the mind. The mind is completely fixed. So it doesn't waver this way and that way. There are no doubts. So one can have another goal other than Krishna and be completely fixed in that. But then one doesn't have the shelter of Krishna. The peacefulness also comes from being confident in Krishna's shelter. Rakshishyatiti Vishvaso Guptritve Varanam Tata. Being fully confident that if I do what I'm supposed to do, Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjana. If I do what I'm supposed to do, which is to do whatever Krishna wants me to do, and not to do whatever Krishna doesn't want me to do, then certainly Krishna will protect me and Krishna will maintain me. And in such an attitude, one becomes completely peaceful. Prashanta Nishesha. Then all the Prashanta Nishesha Manoratantara, then all the convolutions of the mind, they come to an end. The mind becomes very peaceful. And one can be very fixed in Krishna's service. If one is not fixed in Krishna's service, then he'll see problems everywhere where they don't really exist. We find the various levels of devotees, and some devotees, they just somehow or other they're not peaceful in Krishna consciousness. They don't do this. I only want to do this service or not another service. They find problems in their service this way, that way. It means they're lacking in Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, their mind is always agitated. They're not feeling happy. That is the test. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. Srila Prabhupada used to use the word jolly in describing this. The devotee is always jolly. Means a sense of happiness, manifest happiness, the various levels of happiness. Jolly means to be in good spirits. So a devotee is always jolly, always. Of course, even if a devotee seems to be, an actual devotee, even if he seems to be unhappy, he's always happy. Jato dekho vaishnave bebaha duk nischoy janeho taha parananda shuk. This Vrindavan Das Thakur instructs us that if we see that a Vaishnava is suffering, we should understand that's actually just another phase of his happiness. He's always in bliss. There is a photo of Srila Prabhupada, black and white photo, snapped by Gurudas Prabhu in London. We used to have these nice photos of Srila Prabhupada on the temple room wall in the Berry Place temple in London. There's one photo of Srila Prabhupada with his lips turned down, and it looks as if he's in some kind of deep distress. That was pointed out to him by one devotee. Srila Prabhupada, you look so sad in this photo. Srila Prabhupada replied, that was a moment of great ecstasy. So we don't know. We do know from Shastra, a devotee is always happy, even if he's apparently unhappy. That's pure devotees, fully spiritually absorbed in Krishna, with no other desire. This Bhagavad Gita is more for us, who are aspiring to come to that platform. We have faith that we can reach that problem. Krishna gives us some bliss, even a little, advancement or a little touch with Krishna consciousness gives us a taste of that happiness. We become convinced by Krishna's description of this material world as being miserable. We become convinced gradually as we hear again and again and study again and again, I am not the controller. I am controlled. Krishna is the controller. I have to surrender to Krishna. We go on and on in this way, making advancement by hearing, serving, associating with devotees. But we are in the tatastha situation. We're neither fully in Krishna consciousness nor fully out of Krishna consciousness. We're somewhere in between. So the tendency is then that our mind may become disturbed, we may not become peaceful. The Varnashram system is for situating everyone in a situation in which their psychophysical propensities, they're engaged according to their psychophysical propensities. And in this way they perform their material duties in the service of Krishna. In the modern age, there is no Varnashram going on properly. And in the preaching movement of Krishna consciousness, we have to do the needful. That's another saying of Srila Prabhupada's. Do the needful. Do whatever is required for serving Krishna. Which may mean that we don't engage exactly according to the way we may want to, or the way that we think I could do better, because there are so many things that need to be done. If everyone thinks, well, I'll do according to what I think I should be the best, so everyone will think, okay, I'll be the guru. Then who will be the followers? No one's going to think, well, I'll be the toilet cleaner for the rest of my life. Well, maybe some devotees do think like that. All glories to them. We have to do what is required. That in the preaching movement. A preaching movement means not everyone is preaching. I'm sitting here preaching. You're all listening. There are devotees in the kitchen, devotees who are cutting vegetables. What's that got to do with Krishna consciousness? I should be do something more spiritual, like worshipping the deity. Well, worshipping the deity, you have to offer food. And you have to offer food, you have to cut the vegetables. It's all Krishna's service. But if someone thinks, I should be the pujari, I should be the preacher, someone else has to do all the background work, that's a material desire, and then we don't become peaceful and we don't become happy. We are the loser. Krishna is not the loser. We are the loser because we think I have to have it the way I think is best for me. And in this way we become disturbed. In so many ways, Maya has so many ways of distracting us from being pure devotees of Krishna. Maya has so many ways of actually, I hope no one's cutting vegetables, otherwise the prasad's going to be late. It should be cooked by now, right? Maybe for lunch. Anyway, it's just an example. Maya has so many ways of distracting us. She's very capable servant of Krishna. Every living being has, with every birth, a certain mentality. Unique mentality, according to the three modes of material nature. And Maya knows exactly how to mess us up according to our particular combination of previous impressions in the mind, desires in the heart, acquired nature. She knows exactly how to mess us up in various ways. And if we start to do well going away from Maya, she knows how to also adjust herself to pull us back. Maya is a formidable enemy. Not exact. Well, sometimes caste like that, bhukti, mukti, spriha, yava, pishachi. She's sometimes compared to a witch. Of course, she's a great devotee, but she has that service in which she apparently seems to be like an enemy. So, simply to be satisfied in Krishna's service, that in itself is a great level of advancement, to be satisfied. Okay, Krishna gave me this opportunity. Of course, in another way, one can be dissatisfied. I want to do more for Krishna, more for Krishna, more for Krishna. But not to be materially dissatisfied. Circumstances will never be exactly as we want them. The world will not be as we want. Our body will not be as we want. The weather will not be as we want. Sometimes it may be. There are so many factors in the universe all around us which we are not the controller. Krishna is the controller. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So whatever situation He's given us, we shall try to serve Krishna the best we can. And in this way, if we're thinking, let me do the best I can so that Krishna will be satisfied, then we will become satisfied. So what's the whole point here? How we can become satisfied or how Krishna can become satisfied? Again, we come to the point, as Krishna says here, prasanna cheta sohyashu. One very quickly becomes satisfied in the mind. Is that the point? Or is it that Krishna should be satisfied? Well, Krishna is already prasanna chetasa. Krishna is already fully happy. He's giving us the formula. He wants how we can be happy. So it's a quandary that if we think how I shall be happy, then we don't become happy. If we think how shall I make Krishna happy by my activities, then we become happy. So what's the point? The point is that it is natural for us to want to be happy because we are part and parcel of Krishna, who is happy all the time. So it's natural for us to want to be happy. So there's nothing wrong in wanting to be happy, but we should know how to be happy in Krishna's service, understanding that various circumstances, they'll never be exactly as we want. And even if somehow or other they are exactly as we want, it won't remain like that. Because that is the nature of this material world. Everything is always changing. Even if we think, now I got everything perfect, just the way I want, and then something will change. Because everything is always changing in this material world. One of the changes that we go through is the change that comes about, the decline of the body. Old age comes on. And change is intimately linked with time. Time in this material world is that which changes everything. And when we're young, when we're in a young body, it seems that time is acting in our favor because the body starts off very small and incapable. And gradually one grows up and gets more strength and more experience and more intelligence, and you think everything's getting better all the time. This is another trick of Maya, that one grows up and everything seems to be getting better, getting stronger, I'm getting more independent from my parents, I can do things on my own. And then gradually the tide turns and then the body starts to decline, and then old age sets in, and one was previously able to do so many things, he thought, I am doing, now he's not able to do. This may affect devotees also. They may be satisfied in their service, But when they become older, they find that, well, now the younger devotees can do those things better than me. Someone who doesn't have the same experience, they can do, they can preach better than me, maybe because the older people, they just like I was preaching to college students maybe 30, 40 years ago. Now the mentality is very different. So the young devotees, they can preach to them. They understand their mentality. They can preach to them maybe in a better way. And someone may have been a good manager and this and that, but then they find, well, someone else comes up, a youngster who's more talented in doing that. And gradually they may find that, well, whatever they could do previously, they can't do it as well as they could previously. And then what are the youngsters are coming up and making me look insignificant. I used to be able to go out and distribute so many books, now I'm physically not able to do so. Youngsters are doing so. They're more physically fit. They have the strength and energy, and their body isn't suffering with so many pains. They have the enthusiasm. So it may be that older people find themselves to be an anachronism. They don't fit into the present age. They're out of date. It may seem like that. Well, Krishna has an answer for that, that part of varnashram is that one recognizes that one is growing older. If one was previously a grihastha, then becomes a vanaprastha, has a change of mode of life, doesn't try to go on doing the same things that he's been doing for so many years, which the younger people can do better now. Otherwise, the non-peacefulness again will come again. Frustration. I used to be able to lead kirtan for 3 hours non-stop. Now I can't, and someone else is doing it, and I'm not in the center of the kirtan anymore. Oh. But that's natural. Don't become frustrated. You get older, you have to slow down. It's just, that's the way the material body is made. That's the action of time. There's another common syndrome in the Western countries, especially someone who's been active all their life, looking after their children, looking after others, and then when they get older, they don't have the same energy. But also, other people have to look after them, and they become very frustrated. I don't want anyone to look after me, I want to look after others. So, a more sane culture, just in a more sane culture, people just accept, okay, I'm getting old. I have a different role to play now. I'm no longer the strapping, healthy, young man that I used to be. I'm getting old. So the elder has a different duty, just to encourage the youngsters to accept service from them. They're also supposed to accept service, and the youngsters are supposed to offer service. I see in India even now that it may not be in all cases, but you still see young people helping their old grandmother to walk here and there. They just do that naturally, automatically. And in the Western countries, they've removed the problem of old people. That young people have to take time out from their sense gratification, which is the worst possible thing imaginable, to help old people. They remove the problem, they remove the old people. Just lock them up in an old person's prison. They call it, what do they have some euphemistic name for it? What do they call it? Senior citizens home or something like that. And they're just all locked away and then you forget them. And when they die, you take their inheritance, that's all. You go to a funeral and say some hypocritical words and take the inheritance. So, a culture in which people throughout life are developing Krishna consciousness, even in family, are busy working, running here, doing this, doing that, but every grihastha has to take time daily to hear the message of Krishna, to chant the holy names, to see how the teachings of Bhagavad Gita work in their own life, and in this way they become experienced, knowledgeable, and wise, and they can understand how Krishna's energy is working. Then they can give advice to youngsters to help to guide them so that they don't make the same mistakes. All the people have a different role. A very important function of all the devotees, function or service we can say, is to be happy in Krishna consciousness. It's a very important service, just to be happy, to visibly be seen to be happy chanting. You might not be able to do so much, you might not be able to go out on Sankirtan 12 hours a day, but to be happy in Kirtan, just to be, not artificially, but by absorption in Krishna consciousness. If one is happy, then that also gives hope to the youngsters, that now I'm in the family life, and so many headaches, but let me go on practicing Krishna consciousness, then I can be like them in my old age, if I reach that age. Nothing else to do but to be happy in Krishna consciousness and share that with others. Just as we have Haripada Prabhu and his wife here, and Mukunda Prabhu. Is your wife here, Mukunda Prabhu? No, she's not here. So, it's important. You yourselves can tell me if I think you'll agree with me. It's important that you see them having spent their whole life in Krishna consciousness. It's important that you see that they're fully happy and satisfied. They've spent their whole life doing business. In your case, you're a business, self-employed businessman, and Mukunda, you were an academic, I believe, in the university. Now you have nothing else to do. You're to give Krishna consciousness. Of course, Mukunda is also editing books, translating books. But just to be, everyone can see. Okay, you've been through the whole life. You've had family life and all the ups and downs. And often it might seem that it's more downs than ups. You tell me, at least from my perspective, it seems to be like that. But, sannyasis always seem like that. Actually, it's a fact. But at the end of life, the last phase of life, just be happy and share that with others. That gives great hope to the devotees that I have to, yeah, life is tough. But you can come out in the last part and just chant Hare Krishna and then prepare to go back to Godhead. The happiness of Krishna consciousness. And it's not artificial. You can't do it artificially. But naturally, if someone is happy in Krishna consciousness, then they want to share that with others. And when they get older, then they don't have any other responsibility but to share that with others. So it's not that one's life one has to be intimately involved in so many things. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was intimately involved in the management of his ISKCON because he started it in old age, and he didn't find that his disciples were that much capable of managing up to his expectation. But he again and again asked his disciples, relieve me from this management. You do it, and let me concentrate on writing my books. So Srila Prabhupada was involved up until shortly, before his departure from this world in management matters. But that shouldn't be required for everyone. You shouldn't hold on. Srila Prabhupada criticized the politicians. They hold on to their position until the last breath. Literally, in many cases. I was managing this, and I was in the role of a manager within our ISKCON. And at the time I took sannyas, I thought, no more management. There are already so many sannyasis managing. So if I don't manage the world, it's not that the whole world's going to collapse. It's more likely to collapse if I remain in management. Someone else will come up and do it. And let me concentrate on the business that sannyasi is supposed to be doing, traveling, preaching, writing, all these things. So I took early retirement in that sense from management duties. Someone has to manage in the Krishna consciousness movement, but someone also has to not manage. There also should be devotees who are not that they're irresponsible, but they've done those duties, they've done those services. And then by dint of their spiritual maturity and material maturity, they're able to share that with others. And they're happy, they like to hear and chant about Krishna, they like to read, they like to preach, they like to share their happiness with others. And in this way, they're more than peaceful. They're prasanna chetasa, because their buddhi pariyavatishtati, their consciousness is fixed in Krishna. So take hope. Life is a life of struggle, no doubt. This material world is a life of struggle. But that faith that Krishna's looking after us, we're going to Krishna. It may be, as Srila Prabhupada in his great humility stated, I cannot expect direct service to Krishna, even in crores of lifetimes. So it may take time, it may take a very long time, we don't know. But we know we're on the right path, Krishna's looking after us. And in that sense, be peaceful. No need for any great anxiety. Whatever happens, so many bad things will happen. Especially in this Kali Yuga, we can expect one bad thing after another. That's expected. But don't become too much affected by all of that. Just remember that all these things, they'll all come and go. Don't put our mind, don't become completely absorbed in all these. There's so many things for disturbing the mind. But just remember, everything here is temporary. I have my eternal relationship with Krishna. Let me be fixed in that. Whatever anyone says or does, I can always chant Hare Krishna. The whole world can be against us or hate us, but Krishna, he's our good friend, best well-wisher. We can always connect with Krishna, always remain connected with Krishna. And in that way, be peaceful. Harinam bina kichu nahi kawara chodha bhuvana maja. There's nothing in the whole world but the holy name of Krishna. One who has that faith, he becomes on the level of Bhaktivinod Thakur in his life. So many difficulties in so many ways, but he was Bhaktivinod. He was always taking pleasure in pure devotional service to Krishna, which flows out from his pen and his songs. They're all full of the, all from his songs, they're revealing his heart. His heart is full of pure love for Krishna, simply bliss. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Ranganatha Swami ki jai. Hare Krishna.